This is episode 15 with Oscar Van Hoos and Andrew Blades.
Welcome to the Futures Intelligent Leadership Flowcast. This is your host, Tyler Mongan. I am the president of Haku Global. This is a space for globally minded experts to dialogue about the future of leadership with a focus on the key question, how can leadership be more intelligent about futures? From this conversation, innovative wisdom, practical tools, and actionable insights emerge to help future-ready leaders thrive in an uncertain, complex, and exponentially changing world. Let's jump in to the dialogue.
Aloha and welcome to this episode. Today's guests are Oscar Van Hoos and Andrew Blades. Oscar is the co-founder of The Desk, a pioneering collaborative work and event space in Asia. He is also the chief collaborative officer tasked with designing innovation that creates a strategic advantage. Andrew is the manager of risk and compliance for the Environmental Protection Authority of Victoria in Australia. I met Oscar at a workshop I was leading in Hong Kong on conscious leadership, and I met Andrew in Manchester, England at a five-day foresight training immersion. In today's episode, we dive deep into uncertainty. Is uncertainty something we should live with or learn to embrace? If you're interested in exploring how to embrace uncertainty, the power of collaboration, cognitive diversity, balancing the past and the future, developing human skills, planning less and adapting more, and developing foresight, insight, hindsight, and oversight, then this episode is for you. Let's listen. So Oscar and Andrew, thank you for joining me on this episode of the Futures Intelligent Leadership Flowcast. And as always, I want to start with this key question of, you know, how can leadership be more intelligent about futures given this climate of uncertainty, complexity, and exponential change? I'd like to start with Oscar, if you could answer this from your perspective and background.
Yeah, it's a pretty big question, but I'll try to answer this as precisely as possible. I think it's really relevant, especially, so I'm based in Hong Kong, and we basically have the perfect storm. We had a recession, we had the unrest, coronavirus, and so myself, we work in co-working, and we basically had a failed IPO of WeWork, which has really affected our business. So there's been a lot of uncertainty for us, and how we actually trying to cope with this. And one thing for myself, what I really learned is to really basically work with others. So I think the biggest benefit that I personally had is that I actually have two co-founders. If I would have tried to solve this by myself, it would be pretty much impossible. So we actually have a very collaborative relationship. We have completely different backgrounds, you know, from economics to tax to kind of supply chain. And I think that sort of myriad of knowledge that we actually have created has really helped us to see different perspectives and different options how to actually solve problems that we face. So that's a kind of, that's my sort of short take on how we actually are looking at dealing with uncertainty at the moment.
That's great. And Andrew, from your perspective and your work, how do you answer the question?
I'm increasingly trying to get people to take a more broader approach to what it is they're doing. We constantly get told to focus on something, and often the interesting parts of what's happening on the periphery. And people become so focused on a particular activity or their particular model or their particular approach, they shut themselves down to a whole variety of other things that are happening in the world. And I often think about when we talk about scanning and people say, well, look to the future, and what's in the future. I'm also saying to people, have a look at what we've done in the past. What are the seeds that we've sown, and what crop may that deliver in 10 years' time? And do we need to make changes? We'll also sometimes go right back and think, have we seen this before? I talk a lot what I call pinata management, where somebody goes out and hits the pinata, and what bright glossy idea falls out that day is that day's management tool. rather than having a look and saying, well, have we actually seen this before? Is this actually unprecedented, or have we seen something like it before? What could we learn from the past? How do we project that into the future? Mm-hmm. And Tyler, you and I have spoken about this idea of a foresights model of foresight, hindsight, insight, and oversight. Mm-hmm. What are the systems that we need to have in place? And when I talk about systems, it's not just the hard systems, but it's the soft systems. What's the culture? You know, do we talk about diversity and then not embrace diversity? Do we have cognitive diversity? Are we just ticking the box and making sure we've got different looking people around the table? Mm. So for me, if we're going to be more intelligent about the way we approach the future, we need to let go of some of the models that give us certainty, or we think give us certainty, and start to embrace uncertainty and actually have a good look around us and say, well, where are we going and what are the possibilities? I talk about navigating uncertainty rather than managing it. Mm-hmm. And I use that as a very deliberate word because it's about plotting a course, but similar to sailing or flying an aircraft, you've got to move as the weather moves. You've got to be very agile. You've got to be prepared to tack backwards and forwards. And I think we get a little bit too focused on one model, one thing, and we're not sufficiently flexible.
Mm. No, I totally agree with that. It's a, there's a big problem with, you know, people getting really stuck in their own ways of thinking, or not looking out in the periphery, getting too focused, especially the things they've already committed to in the future. With your work, Oscar, how are you, with your collaboration specifically, how are you kind of dealing or navigating that uncertainty that you face right now?
Well, I think it's been mentioned already. It's a kind of mindset as well. I think for me personally, I've worked in a creative industry. So by definition, I think I'm probably more flexible in terms of embracing change and uncertainty. But if you look at, for example, the environment in Hong Kong, I think it's a very conservative environment. So what we're trying to do, or the way we're trying to work, of course, is to find that balance, because I don't think I can expect for everyone to really embrace this uncertainty. I think people biologically probably try to avoid this. Mm. But yeah, so I mean, for myself personally, the way I try to kind of cope with uncertainty is to really look for people around me that can either support me, and that's also the reason why I think this collaborative work and, you know, the future of leadership is really it is really collaborative. And there's a practical reason for this, is that if you work in a silo, you just cannot solve complex problems that we are facing today. It's just way too complicated to solve it by yourself. So yeah, the complex solving part, and I think Andrew mentioned this as well, it's really about improving your cognitive agility skills.
Yeah.
No. Because we are dealing with people here, and I think understanding people, and because we are running a business, co-working, and this is about people, is probably the biggest challenge.
With your work, Oscar, little quick follow up on that is entrepreneurship tends to be, I mean, there's parts of it that are collaborative, but also kind of competitive too. And so, in that co-working space and environment, are you seeing more entrepreneurs collaborating?
Yeah, a good question. Yes, of course, the underlying concept of co-working is co-working, collaborative work. But to be very fair, I don't think this has happened. Mm. I think where we are as an industry is that it's a real estate business. Now you have space, you put people together, and then maybe you match make people. But to me, it's not collaborative work. Mm. The reason why I think we haven't done this as an industry is because it's really hard. It's not something that happens by itself. It really needs to be cultivated and facilitated. So the interest that I have personally in terms of collaborative futures or collaborative practices is that this is not a new concept. Mm. So in other industries, this has been applied and probably implemented quite successfully. But in co-working, we haven't done this yet. Mm. So yes, that's yeah. Going back to your question about entrepreneurs working our space, Yes, there are, let's say, seeds of collaboration. Mm. But we notice that if we do not, in most cases, do not cultivate and facilitate this, it's not very fruitful, or the outcomes are probably not as great as people expected.
Are you seeing challenges to collaboration as well in your space?
So I think there's two interesting things there. Yes, it is a very conservative environment, but as a younger generation comes through, they've got a different way of working. And it's that in itself is interesting. Two of the words there that Oscar's used that I've really locked onto around cultivating and it being fruitful. Mm-hmm. And I really like this idea of, for me, it brings just such a beautiful analogy of you're planting something, you've got to care for it, you've got to feed it, you've got to water it, you watch it grow, you protect it from bugs, you prune it, and then you harvest the fruit. And getting people to realize that you don't do that on a one-off meeting. Getting people that this is something that grows over time, and it's quite organic, and the culture of the organization has to support it. And I come back to the good old pinata management of today we're doing collaboration, next week we're doing design thinking, and then we're going to be agile and we'll use some Scrum. And I think the issue for leaders is, how do I influence my workspace, and how do I get people to follow me, not because of my position, but because of the way I am, my knowledge, my ability to work with others, my ability to bring people together under a common vision in a way that they see that as valuable to them. We talk a lot about creating value. And for me, we often talk about money. But when I talk about value, I talk about merit, worth, and significance. How inherently good is this? What's the worth for me is around not only financial return, but what's the social return? And we have quite a significant problem with suicide in Australia. And one of the pieces around that is that people are starting to feel very isolated. And I see this way of collaborating and helping people work. It gives them a sense of value about what they're doing. They're no longer just sitting in their silo saying, well, I'm the accountant or I'm the engineer. The people are coming together, you're seeing different ideas, and that germinates a different way of looking at things. And recently I've started doing some collaborative facilitation. I'm being led by somebody who's far younger than me, has far more experience in this environment. And I've found it's challenging to move from where I've typically facilitated in isolation. So I've been the facilitator in the room, and now facilitating with a group, and how you have to pre-think about, well, if it does go wrong on the day, how are we going to move as a school of fish rather than how we're going to try and just bulldoze ahead?
Mm. So is that kind of foresight that's needed even just for the collaboration to work properly?
I think there's two things there. There's the foresight of what's happening at the next meeting, but there's also a piece there of, as a senior leader, when you bring people in and you're getting them to collaborate, how do I use that to continue to build into the future and continue to encourage people to think widely? We spend a lot of time planning, breaking things down and writing documents, and government loves a good document and a very strong focus on the artifact, but not so much focus on what is the process that got us to the artifact. Because frequently your 8-year plan, your 10-year plan, your 5-year plan, 6 months in, it's not going to work because something's changed. Like coronavirus has arrived, there's been recession. So what do we do next? And we get so wedded the sunk cost of doing that plan, it's taken somebody 6 to 12 months to write, that we forget about the thinking that went behind it.
Oscar, do you have any follow-up thoughts on that as far as this idea of collaboration again, but also process versus the outcome?
Yeah, so I have maybe a slightly different. I do probably agree that I think we all agree that the future is collaborative. There is internally a conversation that we have or that I have with other people is okay, how much can you control this when you talk about the systematic approach? In fact, we are actually running an experiment next week, and that is more, I don't know if you're familiar with this, is a sense-making workshop. And we actually apply a few different techniques. And there is, although there is a kind of process in there, at the same time, it's actually not what people expect. So I think for me, the future of sort of leadership is to really embrace sort of the non-process part, because it is so unstructured. It is really hard to predict and plan. And I think that's kind of the real challenge internally for me as well, that of course I have certain expectations and I love to plan. You know, I love to know what's going to happen. But at the same time, I know I cannot do this because it will work out differently. So I need to find that balance of, okay, how much process do I need to introduce versus how much do I need to embrace that this may completely go the other way? or something that happens in our business is just really unexpected. And this happens every month. So I've learned for myself not to plan 2 months, which is also really difficult not to plan.
Yeah, what are your follow-up thoughts on that, Andrew? Because I know in the government space, they want to look far into the future. They want to have the planning. But how also can it be organic?
So I sort of go back into strategy as an area just fascinates me. I do a lot of reading on it. And sort of post the Second World War, strategy's been around, we're going to have 5-year goals, we're going to have this, we're going to have that, we're going to have plans. But if I go back to its genesis within the military and international politics, strategy was very big matter decisions. We're going to go to war. We're going to invade this country. We're going to send an expedition on exploration over here. They were very broad ideas. Mm. And within them, a whole series of people did plans. So somebody worked out how many nails they needed to make the ship to go to war, but somebody else made the decision that we're going to war. And I think that for me, there's this process of people want to see every little step that they're going to have to take. And one of the issues we've got in Australia at the moment is people talking about climate change and global emissions, particularly some of the fires we've recently had. And we've got two political parties, one saying we want zero net emissions by 2050, and the other one's got a slightly different view. And they're saying, well, if you can't give us a step-by-step plan, that's no value. Mm. It's a decision about what we want to do. And I come back to the NASA's decision to fly to the moon or the US president's decision to fly to the moon. He didn't give a step-by-step thing. He gave a vision. And then he said to people, right, as technical people, work out how you're going to do that. Mm. And for me, it's that leader's view of where we're going, what we're going to do and what we're not going to do. And I think it gets very easy with strategy to say, we're going to do all these things rather than just saying, these are the three things that we do. These are the things that we don't do. And there's not enough of that setting in very broad pictures. Mm. There's a lot more about give me a blow-by-blow description of how I'm going to get from point A to point B. And somebody has to do that. Mm. But unless you've got that overarching vision of how to move forward or what it is that you're trying to achieve, I think it's very difficult to have plans within it. And the other thing that happens if you're only working on your plan, as Oscar was saying, you don't have the option to flex. Where do I go next? If all my focus is on the plan and I'm not looking more broadly, what's happening around me, what's happening in the future, whether that future's 5, 10 or 50 years out, how do I flex to it? How do I be agile and pivot to the situation that's around me? How do I respond to it? And how do I work out what I should be doing next and not waiting for something to happen before I respond?
Hmm. Yeah, with your industry and work, Oscar, how are you looking into the future? How far are you looking and what are you seeing?
I see a lot of things. I'm not sure if it's true or not, because ultimately no one knows what's going to happen in the future, but that's why this, I guess, is a very interesting conversation. Yeah. I mean, what I hope for the future for myself is that, yes, we I believe to the problems that we are facing on the planet. You know, we talk about global warming. We talk about unrest in the Middle East. We talk about great divisions in Europe and the US. The one thing I've noticed is that they're actually all man-made, at least most of the problems on the planet. So that's maybe the bad thing. But on the flip side of that, I believe that because it's man-made, we can also fix it. But we can only fix this if we work collaboratively. Because that's also what makes us really unique. No, we are probably one of, I think, the only animal that can really, at high level, work collaboratively. We actually can do this really well if we set our mind to it. So maybe that's a sort of big future, but I do believe that without doing this, and now I look at Elon Musk and other projects, things, if we really do this together, and start working and thinking more collaboratively. Mm. I mean, the sky is the limit, literally. Now we're going to Mars. Mm. So that's the kind of hope I have, whether it's going to happen or not. I think we are working towards this. And I think if I bring it one step down in terms of being more practical, then of course, I also believe that at work level, we have to work more collaboratively. Because we have all the technology there, but I think we as human beings, we need to adjust to this. I think the biggest gap I see is not actually hard skill sets. I mean, you can learn that anywhere online. It's more what Andrew mentioned as well, is the cognitive agility. That's something we need to train ourselves. That's not something I guess that most businesses will train you. No, they send you to a coding course or a marketing course, but it actually don't teach you cognitive skills, which I think are the most important skills areas to develop if we want to work more collaboratively.
Mm. And just really quick follow-up, do you think, Oscar, because you've kind of painted that future picture of the those big global challenges we have, that we can solve them collaboratively, at the same time within at least what I've seen within like an entrepreneurial space, a lot of the projects aren't really focused on those types of issues or solving those types of problems. Or is that true? I don't know.
I would say that's probably not completely true. Mm. I think there is a lot of technology out there, innovation, that's looking at this. No, if you look at, I think there's a lot of things out there that we're unaware of. Whether that is making impact right now, I don't know. And I probably agree with you, that probably could be promoted better. But I have a very positive outlook and probably of people that I believe that people do want to fix things. Because what's the benefit of destroying it? I think the biggest challenge that people face is this: they just don't know where to start. They see this problem in front of them, global warming, and they just say, yeah, what can I do about this? So, but I don't think that people realize that if they would take action themselves, everyone can contribute. You know? And I think that's still something, I think, throughout history that we believe, well, if I do something, it's not going to make any impact. But in fact, if everyone would think like that, then of course nothing will happen.
Mm. And Andrew, any follow-up on that?
I think often when we look at some of these really big problems, and I've been thinking about the global warming issue, I sometimes wonder whether global warming is actually the problem, or whether global warming is the result of the problem. Have we been excessive in our use of resources? Have we focused too much on just exponential growth all the time? So we're driving that need for more energy. We're driving that need for more protein. The world's population gets bigger and bigger. Once upon a time, coronavirus or a big flu would have reduced the world's population. But now humanity is able to say, well, we'll stop that. So I look at some of these things and I think, what is it that's driving global warming? And yes, we're using fossil fuels, but what's driving the use of fossil fuels? And I think Oscar's point of simply saying, well, you know what? I'll walk from one meeting to another rather than catch a taxi, an Uber or whatever it is. And I won't use fossil fuel on that 1 kilometer walk. I'll just walk from point A to point B. Mm. Now, me doing that alone may make no difference, but 10 million people do it. It starts to make a difference. Mm. And I think when people are just so overwhelmed by the challenge, and it's easy just to say, there's nothing I can do. I'm going to go back into my hole and I'm just going to live there quite comfortably. Mm. We live in a global world now, but people don't want to look too far outside their own backyard. Mm. And a lot of that for me is around, I want a degree of certainty. And I've said to people, well, how boring would your life be if you knew everything that was going to happen? Like, you weren't going to win the lottery. You weren't going to, I really don't need to do anything for the next 3 days because I'm going to get the promotion on Friday regardless. It's not all predestined. We do like a bit of a surprise. Can you imagine going to a thriller movie where you knew everything that was going to happen? It would no longer be a thriller.
Mm-hmm.
So people say, well, I want certainty, but I don't want all certainty. It's getting their head around the days when you could rely on solid models that worked most of the time. They were a historical aberration. We've sort of seen the post-Second World War, and a lot of us look back and say, well, that's normal. If you go back 100 years, 150 years, the world wasn't like that. The world was full of multiple surprises, not all of them pleasant, like cholera. but every day the question was around, well, what's going to happen today?
Mm-hmm.
Hunter-gatherers, will we get food today? Won't we get food today? It's really nice to know that my major question is, well, what type of food do I get out of my refrigerator, or what type of food do I get from the supermarket? But then you see something like coronavirus where people are saying, well, are we going to be quarantined? Are we going to be locked down? I don't have enough food in my house. It's my world is being shaken and I don't like it. And I don't think we spend enough time teaching people, well, how can you cope with change? And I've said to people at workshops, you know, you say people don't like change. How many of you got married and the hands go up? I said, well, why did you get married? You knew there was going to be change. Oh, well, yeah, but you know, you've got to change, you've got to adapt. I think for a lot of people, it's when change is imposed on them that they really start to struggle. And it's this feeling of, I now have no control. And events like the tsunami in Japan, the bushfires in Australia demonstrate, well, you really don't have any control anyway. You've just convinced yourself that you do. It's then how as a leader do you look to the future and say, well, what are the things that could happen and what may I need to prepare people for? And I've just been reading a book called Rebel Ideas, and they talk about this idea of dominance leadership, people being in a position of authority and things that they have the authority to tell people what to do. And then prestige leadership, where people listen and want to follow somebody because they're knowledgeable, or they've got a skill, or they're generous, or they're just a pleasant person to be with. And this idea of what actually is a leader and therefore what we expect of our leaders. And I think the other thing is we live in such big populations now. We haven't evolved fast enough to catch up with that. We're still evolved for living in quite small communities. And now that we live in these large metropolises, in some cases mega cities, it's even harder to see, physically harder to see to the horizon because you're surrounded by buildings. Your world starts to move in on you. It's difficult to imagine what it's like to look really far out when on a day-to-day basis you can't see much more than a couple of hundred metres because of the buildings around you.
It's interesting. It seems like, I don't know if this is true, what you're saying, Andrew, but it's almost like uncertainty is actually the norm, and certainty has been a rarity that we've kind of had maybe in the past 100, not 100 years, but, you know, 50 years or so. Uncertainty really is the norm.
My undergraduate degree is in history, and I look at it and go, I think uncertainty pretty much has been the norm. We've convinced ourselves that we're now in the Anthropocene era and we can control the world. I'm told that humans now move more dirt every year than you see silt moving down the major deltas of the world. So we can shape the world in a way that no other species has been able to do before. And that gives us a certain feeling of, well, that we can do all this stuff. Then when you're confronted with coronavirus unrest that people didn't expect, you know, a sudden recession, it's, well, like, my world has been rocked. But in fact, your world's a lot more like that than you think it is.
Oscar, what do you think is about that idea?
Well, yeah, I think human beings are very complex, to be honest. I mean, if I was just listening to what Andrew said, I think everyone, I mean, so the one thing I've seen happening in the last decade, you had the rise of entrepreneurship. No, it's not completely new, but then of course you had the introduction of disruptive ideas, you know, which changes entire industries, Airbnb, Uber, you name them. And people have really applauded that, the majority of the planet. Simultaneously, because these are really disruptive ideas, people want certainty. So I guess this kind of, and for me the same. So it's of course easy to point fingers at people, say, hey, you don't want to change, you have to change. And I can't impose that. But I agree that uncertainty is just a matter of life. It's just part. And I think that how we are coping and overcome uncertainty is, I think, one of the future skills that we need to learn, or not future skills that we have to learn today. And because people, I think, are so fearful of, maybe it's because we are way more connected than, let's say, 20 years ago. So we know everything what's going on in the smallest village on the planet. That we are so bombarded with so much information. And of course, I mean, our lizard brain hooks in on the really negative news, because that's something that we just are attracted to. But maybe that has, of course, a consequence that we have all this information, and that we sometimes need to disconnect, and we need to relearn how to cope with uncertainty.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about how, I mean, I just think back when I was younger, there were so many things I was taught that were certain, whether that be in history or science. And then as you explore more and get older, you find out that those things weren't really that certain, right? There was a lot of, there's still a lot of uncertainty around them. And like you're saying, Oscar, it's like with this increased access to information and knowledge and high levels of connectivity, we can see that the world is very uncertain. Like, there's a lot of uncertainty everywhere. Things we thought we were certain about are now open to uncertainty.
Yeah, I wonder if our if this time is actually more uncertain than, say, 50 years ago. I really don't know. I mean, I wasn't born then. But I think it's maybe the notion that that things now are more uncertain than, let's say, 20 years ago. Maybe I just, the way I think is just different now. I don't, because personally, I don't think the time that I live in right now is not more uncertain than 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Maybe I was more ignorant 20 years ago, so I'm more aware of what's happening right now. So that's my personal sort of take on, is there really more uncertainty now than, let's say, 20 years ago? I don't know.
Yeah, and it seems, I mean, even by framing this conversation around uncertainty, it already kind of puts the focus on that, and then we think there's more weight to it maybe than there is. I don't know, Andrew, what do you think about that?
So the term VUCA is very popular: volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. Evolved around about 1987 as the Americans started to recognize that the Cold War could well come to an end. And it was no longer going to be this, us on one side and the Soviet Union on the other. That was a pretty stable model. It had been stable for the best part of 45 years. And then all of a sudden, the world changed. Now, I remember in my last semester of university, I was studying European politics, Western and Eastern European politics. And by the time we went into the exam, so this is over a 13-week period, the lecturer came to the exam and said, look, whatever your answer is, it's probably going to be right, because what I taught you at the beginning of the semester, so over 13 weeks, changed three times. So just date when you think you're talking about, so I know whether you were talking about yesterday or 5 years ago. And for me, I found that was fascinating. And I was alive through that. I remember it well. It was just as I was going into the workforce. And then I see people say, oh, VUCA, it's the new world. This is a new term, VUCA. Well, it's been around for over 30 years. It's probably not that new. And if it is, you're only just learning it. But for a lot of people, they'd gone from this really nice, stable, I know what the world is like, to, ooh, I don't know what the world is like. It's different. And oh, by the way, I didn't know what it was like yesterday. And by the time I wake up this morning, I thought it had it under control. I've now watched the news and it's changed again. And I'm going to experience the same thing the next day. And I think it's the speed at which we're getting information. And I wasn't alive this long ago, although I was alive 50 years ago. When Columbus traveled around the world was flat.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people believed. He came around and said, no, it's not. I can prove it. Now, the world had been round before he got on his ship. It was never flat.
Mm-hmm.
And people's their whole view of the world suddenly changed. Well, what do you mean we're not going to fall off the edge? What do you mean we can go, it's not flat? This changes everything we've ever believed. And you can go back to, you know, the sun goes around the earth goes around the sun. The laws of physics didn't suddenly change because somebody looked up at the sky one day. We make stories to fill our minds so we've got a degree of comfort with what's happening around us. And I think the comments before about living with uncertainty, and I talk about embracing uncertainty. If you recognize that it's uncertain and you live in highly uncertain times, and some people live in more uncertain environment than others, then change the tools that you use.
Mm-hmm.
But we still come back to, I've got a value chain model and it all works like this, and it's step after step. And as Oscar said, it's a complex world and it's changing and adapting, and people are changing and adapting within it. And this whole idea that we can plot everything and it'll be there the same way the next morning, there's some fundamental flaws with it. I just don't think we've evolved quickly enough to be able to embrace that.
So I think this is a good point to wrap up here. And what I like to do is just have each of you just kind of give your final thoughts from this discussion. And I'll start with Oscar, kind of give your last kind of what's kind of on your mind now after all this?
Yes, what's on my mind? A lot of stuff. The only thing I can say about complexity is I think one of the reasons why people feel, including myself, it's so complex is just the amount of information that we have. And especially in a leadership position, you kind of really want to filter out, you know, the sort of 20-80 rule where you want to focus on the 20% that makes 8% impact. But how do you do this? Because there's really so much information out there. And I think that for me, you know, listening to both of you, I think, yeah, it is a really complicated environment. I don't have a cookie cutter solution for things. And I think what maybe there was more certainty in the past where we had certain models and you could apply that and you would kind of expect a certain outcome. But now those models just don't work anymore, or at least every business is just works in a different way. So I really need to take certain ideas from someone else and adapt it to my specific, unique position that I'm in and see if that works. And I think that that's just really hard. But yeah, I do believe I'm hopeful for the future. I do agree that the future of leadership is collaborative, and I think that's going to happen, whether we like it or not.
Thanks, Oscar. And Andrew, any final thoughts?
Well, I think increasingly my thought process is around look up, look out, look around.
Mm-hmm.
Stop focusing down on the minutiae. I think we've got a real potential. We've got a real habit of doing that. I won't say potential. But I also remember coming into the workforce and we didn't have emails, and computers were only just starting to enter as everyone had one on their desktop. And you didn't get 400 memos arriving on your desk. People would come over and say, I've got a report I'd like you to read. They didn't send you three emails saying, can you have it done by the end of the day? Because they knew it was a 500-word report. We have that much information flowing through the pipelines and that much coming at us all the time. Our ability to filter it is struggling. But I agree with what Oscar said, that if we don't start working together on more things and we don't take a more collaborative approach, we're going to continue to struggle. This constant, it's a zero-sum game, is only going to do long-term damage if we don't start looking at, well, how do we work on things that we don't need to compete in? Business is always going to compete, but where are the areas that we don't need to compete? Like if you've got a better way of recycling your waste in your office and I can benefit from that so we have less waste in the world, that's a good thing.
And final question I like to leave the audience with is to ask each person to share one word that they would like to leave for leaders to help them be more intelligent about the future. So, Oscar, what's one word?
One word. Collaboration.
Perfect. And Andrew?
I can't get it to less than two. Scan periphery.
Scan periphery. Great. Thank you both for your time today. I really appreciate your insights and wisdom and dialogue.
Thanks, Tyler.
Thanks, Tyler.
Thank you for joining us today on the Flowcast. To get a summary of today's dialogue, find out more about today's guests, listen to previous episodes, or discover more about Haku Global's neuroscience-based Futures Intelligent Leadership programs or customized strategic foresight and innovation sprints, visit us at www.haku.global. At Haku Global, we believe it is time for more Futures Intelligent Leadership. The future is something we need to think more intelligently and feel more deeply about so we can collaborate to discover today's solutions for future problems. If you are in a leadership role and need support or training to scale futures intelligence across your organization, then contact us at Haku Global. This is your host, Tyler Mongan, and until next time, have a preferred and conscious future. Aloha.